Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Today we're talking about psychic hands and taking calls for on-air readings. So we're going to get to our caller in just a moment, but I want to first invite you to join us on Facebook and on Twitter and here on Blog Talk Radio. You can follow our show here and stay connected with our updates and so on and so forth. And what else? 914-338-0164 is the call-in number. Please do press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. The number for further conversation, 562-596-7818. So we'll bring on our first caller, I believe. Is this Valeska?
It is.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. One day at a time, one foot in front of the other right now. I'm okay. So I had done what you guys had told me to do, and that was kind of a dead end.
Really?
Yeah.
And, so you talked to that. We can say that you talked to an attorney, a specific attorney. Did you ever meet with him?
No, I had to call in, and then I gave them the story, and they called me back and said that he wasn't interested.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Gosh.
But, you know, my lawyer has filed a lawsuit against the doctor. And the weekend before my lawyer actually filed the lawsuit, I had another medical, actually his specialization is medical malpractice lawyer call me that I had reached out to last summer. And he called me back in January and asked me to send him the stuff. And then I never heard from him. And then he called me to say, oh, I'm going to file an intent to sue and send them a letter. Can you call me before I file this? And I called him back and said, you know, I never heard from you. I didn't know that you wanted to work with me. I have a lawyer, and I mentioned my lawyer's name, and he's like, oh, I know him well. He's like, you know, he sends me clients. He's like, well, let him know if he needs any help with the case or if he wants me to take it over or anything, but let him know you spoke to me. And I mentioned that to my lawyer, who said something like, oh yeah, I actually have to call him. He's like, that's great, two for the price of one. And I don't know how any of this works. And I don't know what he meant.
So, he filed a lawsuit, the current attorney. Is this a personal injury lawsuit or is it medical malpractice?
Medical malpractice. I looked into what you had mentioned about it could possibly be personal injury. And because this did happen from a surgery, it has to be medical malpractice.
Oh, really?
Because of the injury.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, because of the injury that he caused me did happen while it was a surgery. This is considered medical malpractice.
Okay, but the attorney did file, so that's good, because at the time, last time you spoke, you were saying that he was not going to file.
You know, I didn't know, because my attorney as well had some other cases going on, and it didn't seem like we were communicating. Well, he still does need a doctor to say that this is malpractice.
Okay.
And we have one doctor. It's an orthopedic surgeon, but he's not specialized in the foot and ankle, that said, yes, this is incredibly messed up. And he is willing to talk to my lawyer. My lawyer said, you know, it's not going to be as strong as coming from an orthopedic surgeon that specializes in that. And the orthopedic surgeons that I saw that specialize in this won't help me.
Is it possible to seek, to continue to seek someone who's more specialized in the foot and ankle as you move forward, that might testify? I mean, is that possible? Or whatever needs to be done. I don't know if it's testifying or writing or whatever.
With all the doctors I've seen and all the money I've spent, I'm just kind of exhausted. And I feel like I'm losing hope because even with a lawsuit, it's not going to bring my life back. I haven't moved for a year.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, I don't have a quality of life. Like I'm sad because I live in constant pain. I don't even sleep without pain. I have no function on the right side of my body. It's like he took a chainsaw and cut the right side of my body off. Like it's already in another dimension. It's not here.
It's horrible. It's horrible. And we really, really do empathize with you, Valeska.
Yeah.
It kind of breaks my heart because I've done a lot of research now and I've read about a lot of medical malpractice cases. And I'm realizing, you know, it's a medical practice and they are practicing on you. They're not God. And I've seen a lot of people who've taken their lives from surgeries that went wrong or from the anesthesia, things where I'm like, wow, we're not supposed to be messing with the bodies like this.
I know.
You know, we're really not supposed to be going in with a scalpel and moving things around like that.
It's true. I mean, surgery is so invasive. So, I mean, it's unfortunate.
And I found with the medical community, unless they can sell you surgery or drugs, there's not much they want to do for you. It doesn't feel like, you know, I don't know. It felt like before you hear about doctors where kids would go see them. And I know there are good doctors, but I, for the most part, have come across the ones that if there's no money in it for them, like with my lawsuit, they don't want to help you.
Well, there might be some hope with your attorney, but you said, you know, obviously there's two stories going on. There's compensation, perhaps, that you can obtain legally. And if it's medical malpractice and your attorney's agreeing to investigate that, that's at least some hopeful sign on that basis. The other part, Valeska, I mean, we've always sort of supported your attitude and your feelings and your requests. So we've always been behind you on that. Having said that, I mean, there's only so much we can do in terms of what your original request was, to just move over to the other side and just leave the earth behind, which was, you know, it's a difficult thing to hear, but we still supported you to the extent that if it was to be done, it would have to be done in your sleep and God would just take your soul and that would be the process without any inducement on your part. If seeing now that you're still on the planet and you're contending with all this and having to work through this aggravating situation, I mean, you've got enough pain to deal with that you would think that if the powers that be would just say, here's your compensation, here's what you deserve now for this terrible accident, you would think it would be easy. Then you get into the idea of the horrible notion of karma, and you go, well, maybe it's karma, maybe this is what I have to go through. And that's one of the most difficult things to face on the planet is if you accept the idea of karma, then you have to visualize that, well, things happen and it's brought upon my soul, I'm dealing with it. Then you have to get into the issues of faith and endurance and trying to make something out of your life from it all. And that becomes a very hard process. What I'm hearing from you is you're literally in pain. This has taken away your life. You can't cope. You have no dependable life that you could think of because of the pain and how it's crippled you. And you're just saying, what do I do? Am I existing to fight for my rights and some compensation? And then I still get turned away God, it's terrible. I mean, it's a terrible thing.
Though she did get her attorney to file the lawsuit, so there's been
progress.
So we want to make sure that that's acknowledged.
But we don't want to come on and just bowl you over with, well, have faith, you know, be positive. This is what the God's, you know, we don't want to be that obnoxious. And it is obnoxious. I mean, even though that's a nice thing to say and it's a nice thing to believe, it doesn't really get into the fabric of a person's misery. You have to, you know, if you're going to be of hope to somebody, you're supposed to be able to feel their pain and understand what they're going through, which I hope Krista and I have done for you so far.
Thank you.
You know, what we're trying to do, we're struggling with you. You know, supposedly we have an advantage because, you know, we talk to angels, guides, spirits, we profess to be psychic, and then we try our best to have power, you know, and then the phrase, you know, we'll give the power to God. And we try everything. We have power. God has power. We release it. We hold it. We're trying to do everything we can to help you. And if it's nothing more than tight ropes of hope and energy work and trying to conference with you about how we can make this better for you, I mean, then that's what we're doing. Chris and I were confronted with a very difficult situation this morning where we have to rely on issues of faith and prayer.
Oh, with a client, you mean?
Yeah, with a client. And, you know, but when person's in misery and nothing's happening, they just say, well, there's no God. You know, it's worthless. It's just chance. It's a word of chance, world of chance. And you're praying to nothing. And, you know, I mean, it's just the degree of what one's beliefs are. Because Chris and I will always believe and have faith.
Not as believer as I used to be, but I still, my whole life I have been a scapegoat and, you know, was in a very abusive family. Now, I got, before the surgery happened, I believed that I was at the top of the hill and I had gotten away from my mother, but then unfortunately she started stalking me, and that's kind of how I ended up in the surgery. And I still believe in soul contracts, and I do believe that the majority of this was something that I chose. I think that I just had a different idea as an ego-based person of what my life should look like, and I think my soul had a different idea of what it wanted to learn.
Well, I mean, I don't know if, you know, in terms of karma, sometimes there's really not the choice of the soul, I would say, that there's, you know, there's things we encounter on the earth, problems that we can't escape. Really, rather than it being the choice of a learning experience, it's working out karma from past lives. So I think, I mean, all the times we've talked on the show, that's been kind of the diagnosis in terms of what caused the situation with the doctor and with your mother. And obviously there was, you know, karma with the family. This brings up a question though. I wanted to ask you, Valeska, because there was, I know on a previous show, we had talked about your father being possible source of financial assistance for you. Did you ever have that conversation with him? I can't remember who asked.
I did have the uncomfortable conversation with him, and he was not happy about it. He said he will do it on a month-to-month basis, but, you know, he very much shamed me for having the surgery and for why I can't get my life together and why I'm in this position. And I told him, I cannot beat myself up for this anymore. This is not my fault.
No, it isn't your fault.
The initial reason she had the surgery.
Huh?
The initial reason she had the surgery was
because of her foot. So you had the surgery backing up. Neil's asking, good to ask
because,
her.
Yeah. Well, you had a pain. You had a pre-existing pain.
She had a club foot.
Yeah, you had a club foot.
Yeah. I've had problems with my shoes my whole life. And my mother actually told me when I was little that I had problems with my feet and I had to wear special shoes. But she's a sociopath and she lies. So I never know what's right coming out of her mouth. And I always had problems wearing shoes. My big toe is like a thumb on my calf and was not on the same level as my other four toes. So my other four toes, my ankle rolled out and it was a complete right angle and the other four toes grabbed the ground and the big toe was literally curling up into my calf.
So are you questioning whether you had this pre, I mean, you're saying that possibly, are you saying that your mother possibly made you wear shoes to deform you rather than having a condition at birth?
You know, I do see my baby pictures and I see that I had them at birth, but my mother has done everything she can to hinder my independence, she would try to get me fired from jobs or call boyfriends and tell them I was mentally ill and needed medication. Oh, so she was always trying to cut me off at the feet, basically, so that I couldn't get away from her.
Oh, boy. Well, you had a pre-existing condition. Well, if you had a pre-existing condition, we could, if we believe in karma or whatever, then that you came into the world with this condition. And then, of course, then you came into the world with your mother's aggravating you even more due to the condition. So this is pretty deep stuff. And, we back you up in terms of being autonomous, healthy, getting through this, and or, you know, being lifted to the other side if it's natural.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
You know, somebody had mentioned to me, which made a lot of sense, that this with my feet and my mother was actually a carryover from another life in China where they did the foot binding. And that's exactly what my foot do.
Who said that? I'm sorry.
A friend who can read astrological charts. I can read them vaguely, but my friend is like, has been doing it for 30 years. And she was like, this is textbook, like the way that my planets were on the chart. She said, I feel like this is a continuation from a lifetime in China, in like the 1300s with your mother, where she made you do foot binding. And that's exactly what my foot does, if you've ever seen the Chinese foot
binding. But they may have done it in China, too.
I think it was in China, but didn't the geishas have to do something with their feet, too? They had to fit tiny shoes. Japanese.
Yeah, they would oil them up on the toes on the outside and break them and curl them under and leave the big toe sticking up, and they would push them into these lotus shoes, which is weird because I had a website called The Blonde Lotus, and they would crunch them up until they were 3 inches, and they saw
was
it
that
as
Chinese?
They,
was China, that Chinese or Japanese?
China. China. That was China in the 1300s.
Okay, because I thought the Japanese did that too, the geisha. But maybe I'm wrong.
No, you're probably right.
Yeah, but it was the Chinese. I've looked it up, and that's it. When I looked up, I had never heard of it. That's exactly what my foot does, exactly the way those four toes curl under and the big toe sticks up. I was like, oh, my gosh. And my friend was like, it seems like when you came out this time, your four toes on the outside were like couldn't stop growing because they had been squished in, and they grew so much further, longer than the big toe. So,
well, this is kind of an interesting take. Have you, I once told a person that he had a past life in China, and he was just a Caucasian guy who lived in America, and I said, you had a past life there, and he said, this makes sense to me. Years ago, for whatever reason, I went to China on a bike tour. I never knew why I was doing it. But this is the only rational explanation I can think of what you just came up with. So this is an interesting angle.
It is.
Have you had ever had any connection with China as a child? Has there been any dreams, any physical connection?
I mean, not China directly, but I've always been attracted to Asian culture, Buddhist kind of things. And just I've always been attracted to half Asian men, things like that. But not China directly. More, I get mad at China because of what they do to their animals. I don't have direct connection.
Not to mention the citizens in many cases.
You see, that's just it. What happens? The interesting thing about karma is that you think that when you're born in this world, you have a lineage, you have a genealogy, and that goes way back in time. But if you also had a past life in China, that has nothing to do with your lineage in this lifetime. So we come into the world with these separate lineages and genealogies that are not even connected to each other. So we come with these separate stories as though we're a composite of many different identities. So if you were to trace your background in this lifetime, you may find there's nothing like this going on. So you have to, like I said, go through a psychic or something, discover that you might have had a connection in your soul in China at one point, and that your soul is still carrying that concentrated energy, which has nothing really to do with this lifetime, which makes it disturbing because it makes you say, why in the hell is this happening in my lifetime? It makes no sense until you go to that degree. You know, it's fascinating.
Go ahead, Valeska.
That guy that I told you about that I believed I felt a twin flame connection to, that I asked you about if he was going to do something with my writing after I transitioned, he is half Chinese.
That's more evidence.
Now the plot thickens. Now it gets very interesting. So the thought process in my mind is somehow to go to the recollection, the past life regression to China. And somehow with a skillful person, and it probably would require some kind of fee or something, I don't know, maybe you could find somebody, that would take you there to unlock what's going on or what happened there and how it was brought back to this stage of life. So that's another key, a very interesting plot development that's being revealed that could unlock energy. You know, I mean, Freud started to unlock regression in patients because he just decided things happened in childhood and it was sexual and all this. So, you know, now we're going back to past life. We're going to deeper parts of psychology, the psychology of the cosmic mind, the soul of the mind. And maybe something there could possibly reveal an incident or something that could help to remedy this. You know, it's a big story, what I'm presenting, and it's maybe intriguing, but not viable. But still, that's interesting. That's interesting, Valeska.
So do you think if I saw, I don't know, I've done past life regression before. That's actually how a lot of my writing came about. A lot of my scripts is what I saw in past life regressions. But if I maybe got some, if I went back to that China lifetime and found out why I chose to continue at this lifetime, I could get some closure and my soul would find peace to transition peacefully.
If I was hearing this and I were you, that's what I would do. But see, then the trick is, you know, to go with someone skillful so that your imagination isn't taking over reality. And you're really hitting something that's true and not imaginary, because you're already going to have to use some sense of imagination to get there. So you want to make sure that imagination leads to truth. But it could unlock. I mean, you know, that's the truth. That's the light.
But in terms of her actually healing physically from this, is that possible from a past life regression?
It could transform the body. The body can be transformed. We're talking about a molecular structure. And the molecules can also be cosmic and energy and astral body. So it can, I'm not saying that it will, but I'm saying that in the world of miracles. You know, the redundancy aside, that there can be perhaps a change of some sort. I don't know. But, you know, and when we get into the idea of how Moses transformed things, how Christ transformed things, life can be morphed into something different than what we think it is. And that is the whole process of rejuvenation, of rebirth, of transformation, transfiguration. These things can occur within a person's lifetime. So I think that, yes, it would be, if you can find a way to explore that, under you know,
whatever
conservative means, that you don't, you know, somebody doesn't take advantage of you or whatever, and you can do so, absolutely. Maybe you can even do it in your own way. You know, maybe you can train yourself to experiment with it in the dream world and just train your mind and see if you can get to that place in your pineal gland where you can do an astral travel and take rapid notes when you wake up.
Yeah, I would say to start like investigating China. Start to put your mind there, you know, in terms of just
interesting
on a logical intellectual basis.
Yeah, we're not trying to, you know, elongate your interest on the planet. We're trying to figure out, we're sincerely trying to figure out how to help you.
Yeah, no, I know. And I feel, believe me, like my teeth don't even touch on the right side anymore. The more steps I take and the longer this is going out, the more my right side is actually leaving. So this isn't actually for me about healing. There's no way to go back to what I was before. And I'm very okay with this part of my soul contract. I just want to know what my soul needs to complete before it makes a natural transition, because I don't want to have to come back and do it.
Having this discussion we're having this morning that I think is very intriguing, I would say that to complete, if this is a chapter in your soul that's unresolved and that you brought back to this stage of life, I would say to go back like a mystery story. You're trying, like the mystery story, Laura, whatever it is, and you know, all the mysteries that we have to handle. Chinatown. We're trying to figure out what it is. So to go back to the soul and discover that
my
complication could help resolve you.
Yeah, like there's a missing soul piece or something that I need to retrieve for completion or something, maybe?
Maybe once you do that, you know, your wish fulfillment to pass through the earth will be filled. You know, we can't involve you in any sense of self-suicide or anything, you know.
No. I don't either.
You know,
I want to be, that's not what I'm looking for either. I want to be complete and have things happen naturally, but I feel a natural closure. And it feels like an intense thing, but there feels like there's one missing piece that I don't know, is like soul retrieval that needs to happen or something.
Perhaps if that is occupying your mind, you might have an easier time existing on the planet in the physical pain that you're in.
You know, it's weird. It's almost comical. I mentioned Chinatown, you know, where the main character discovers what's going on with the feminine role, you know, and it's incest and all that's happening. And
what are you talking about?
The movie Chinatown.
I don't know the movie.
Roman Polanski's film. Robert Towne wrote the screenplay, and here we're talking about China.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It's just kind of weird. It's kind of whimsical. But yeah, I would do that. Why not? I mean, why not? Maybe what you discover can release your soul from being bound to the earth, and maybe that's part of the process.
Yeah. I'm having a hard time connecting right now because I'm feeling so physically grounded in my body with the pain. Is there somebody that you know that is good with that might help me unlock that? China?
I
don't think, you know, we're not in the practice of recommending other people. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, I mean.
Would you be able to
help me? You know, we would obviously recommend ourselves, but that's not what the point is here.
No, and I mean, we're not trying to push any services or anything like that.
We don't know anybody personally, but you may discover somebody that you're comfortable with.
But you do that too?
You know, do we do that kind of work? Yeah.
Yeah,
but you know, we're not trying to promote ourselves. That's not what this show's about.
No, I get that. I know. I believe you genuinely want to help people, and I feel that.
Yeah,
I feel
definitely.
It. Yeah,
well, that's good.
No, I get
glad that you feel it.
You guys have a gift, and I think it's beautiful the way that you help people, and that's why I speak to you, because you're for real.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, what you would need to do, Valeska, is maybe, like Kristen said, you know, you go into dream world yourself, you involve yourself in things about China around that time, and you go to sleep and you visualize it. Otherwise, you might want to search out somebody that is very good at past life regression. It could even be a licensed psychologist. That, you know, is kind of human fashion it believes in those kinds of things.
Do you have insurance? Health insurance?
Yeah, I do.
That would be, I mean, that would be...
That would be your first route.
Right. Traditional, where there's something that you could, you know, gain a benefit from that you're not paying necessarily out of pocket.
You're not paying. If you found somebody licensed, a psychologist that believes in past life regression and is trained to help unlock that, that would be one way of doing it. Otherwise, you go more into the esoteric, you know, the more metaphysical fields, and you find somebody that is really trustworthy. Yeah, we do that kind of work, but maybe we're not the one. I don't know. You know, you'd have to. Our first suggestion is to find somebody clinical and that really believes in it, that it's not just some psychological way that they go, oh, yeah, past life regression, okay, because you have a real problem and we'll just use that as a shield. Now, that you really find somebody authentic that believes in it and that's trained to go there with you. Or, you know, you find somebody, like we said, in the metaphysical field that you are comfortable with and it's, and, you know, everything works out in terms of any kind of process that you would be obligated to. So it's all that, you know, it's dependent on that. But the main thing is, I think we might have touched something here. And I'm glad we were able to spend this extra time with you because we do care about you.
Thank you. Thank you. You guys have actually, like, I've been at such a bottom. Like, you're one of the few people that are giving me hope, because it's amazing how when you get to a place where you become disabled like this, a lot of people fall out of your life.
Yeah.
And it's even hard describing to people what's happening in your life when your foot looks normal, but your bones and tendons don't work normal.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. And that's, you know, we don't abandon, no way would we abandon people. You know, we're more Christ consciousness. You don't abandon people because they're in pain. I mean, that's what we're about. We look for those. We actually look for those things because we have our DNA is to help. That's what we're trying to do in the small way that we do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been given a gift, and thank you for sharing that with the world.
Well, you're welcome.
Thanks, Veloska.
And, you know, always use our show whenever you want.
We're always here to support you.
Yeah, absolutely. And let us know if this works. I mean, we've given you some suggestions, and we're always here for feedback.
I'm going to meditate on my next step, and I'll keep you guys posted. And, yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, this has helped kind of, maybe seeing what's happening.
I would say it's intriguing.
Glad she mentioned that.
Yeah. Yeah, because we didn't even pick up on it. So the fact that you mentioned it, I mean, I got a kind of a chill when you said it. So it's very intriguing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll have to see why I chose to carry this over. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Veloska. Keep in touch.
Thank you. Okay. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. So we can start our conversation.
You know, I mean, if we were different, if we were of a different characteristic and a different quality, and we're talking about hands, then we would say, well, you know, Christ can go over and lay the hands on her and heal her.
Right.
Now, whether that really happened or not, because it's biblical and, you know, we assume it happened, whatever, we could say that, But you see, that's a direct, the laying on of hands is really about the direct link to God, channeling that energy and that power through faith. And then there is the laying on of hands, which is the actual phrase, the laying on of hands. Even when what we do with our hands, think about it, how powerful the hands are. If we want to make a connection to God, what do? We fold our hands
together.
And we,
folding or pressing. And direct our mind to God.
And it becomes a link. Because it becomes a union of energy. I don't know what got it started with what's the ruling behind folding or pressing?
I don't know.
I guess if you press, the palms are more directly connected because there is a chakra in the palm of the hand.
Experimenting, and actually the palm chakras are connected either way.
Yeah, they both do it. I don't know. Maybe it's something to do with the digits or something. I don't know. But it doesn't matter. there's a chakra in the palm of the hand. Have you ever seen those things where the person lifts their hand up and they drew an eye on their
palm? Yeah, and there's a lot of depictions of Christ with a something emanating from the palm chakra.
Yeah. And then the palm is a map, and this palmistry, and everything, the line here, and the Mount of Jupiter,
right.
And Saturn.
And then now, you know, in modern times, this Reiki has become very popular, so the laying on of hands,
right.
And there's the symbols associated with Reiki, and of course it dates back to, you know, bygone eras, but
still
in a different culture, Japanese culture, than the energy of chi, which is, you know, also Asian.
So there's something, you know, when we were created as human beings, there's something about these hands, not more or less the feet, and what made us intelligent for tool making and whatnot was that the thumb, prehensible thumb, that became an instrument through which we could manipulate and make tools, and that evolved with, and that helped to develop our minds and whatnot. And so the most direct link to the thumb would be the primates. And then there made a leap there from Cro-Magnon to Neanderthal and that kind of thing. It moves up into the evolutionary line. But one of the things was standing upright, so that we could use our hands now, and we didn't have to use our hands for crawling, but we could now use them. And then the thumb made it very agreeable to making tools and manipulating the environment, and then coupled with our minds. So the hands must be very important. And the laying on of hands, or the hand energy, it goes way back in time. And even in Christ's time, He couldn't perform many of the miracles without the use of his hands, because it's depicted that way. So there must be something behind that. Even when Moses, when his staff was turned into a serpent, he had, I can imagine, he's holding it with his hands. And then it becomes this, at least in biblical lore, it becomes a serpent, and, you know, the Egypt and everything, there's ultimately the Exodus. But the hand energy, and when we talk about the hand of God, God has a hand, the right hand of God, the hand of God. There's something about this business about the hands that's pretty fascinating. And I know that when I'm giving readings, if I put my hand over somebody, not touching them,
there's an energy.
Just over, you feel the energy.
Well, not everybody does, but people that are more in tune will feel the energy.
Will feel the energy, and when they do feel it, they'll say, I feel tingling, there's a warmth going on, it's going all throughout my body. I've often put my hands over people.
And then looked
at the palm of my hand, and I've seen pictures.
Images.
Like, I'll say, gee, I see a two-story house on my hand right now. It's visual. I see it. They go, I live in a two-story house. Or I'll say, gee, I see like broken bone. Oh, I broke my bone when I was 8. The hand seems to be able to absorb energy. Something in the palm there, in the center of the palm, where maybe the one of the key chakras are, aside from the 7 chakras, that can be like a television screen. It receives the energy of a person, like a TV, and then it reassembles the energy into a picture. And that becomes something significant. I know that, too, it's weird because you can use the hand as a channel. So if I'm putting my hand over somebody and I want to see a picture, that's one thing. But if my mind says I want to put energy into the person, I don't care about what's on my hand, I want to put the energy in my hand into the person, my brain starts to go to that channel, and I'll usually hear people say, oh my God, I feel this tingling going on. So there's something about the hand, aside from the fact that it's also a map.
Right, reading the hands, which the hands can change throughout time. I mean, what's on the hand, and it's not only because of the aging process. I mean, there's other factors that change the map of the hand, in
Correct.
Terms of psychically, you know.
I'll never forget a dear friend was talking about in England that all the palm readers that were reading people's hands, the male hands, M-A-L-E, they were seeing these short lifespans. on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of men. All the palm readers were getting together and saying, we're seeing short lifespans on all these men's hands. And then what happened thereafter, World War II. And so weird. I mean, do world events change the formation of a hand? And then that becomes miraculous. That's transformation and transfiguration right there. So there's something about the hand that's very powerful. Right now, Kristen's looking at her hand. And it looks like she's having a heart attack.
Because I see a man's head in my palm. Do you see that?
Yeah, that's where you slapped me that
day. No, I'm not kidding you. Do you see it or not?
Yeah, I see a man's head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
so, I mean, that's not something I've ever seen
Does
before.
Does he hang around here? What's going on there?
I mean, I've just, you know, I haven't looked in my palms in a while. So,
yeah, well,
you know, sometimes, you know, things change periodically. Obviously.
Well, that's where we get the
word. Not sure why that's appearing in my hand right now.
That's where we get the word hand job. But the idea that maybe we should say hand job. We'll just leave it as Job. The idea that the hand,
you're bad.
Well, we can keep the idea. You know, all I see.
I guess I'm giving this man a hand job right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I mean, I see a butterfly in my hand right now. I see an X, a big X. You know, they say on the hand,
the psychic
hand,
energy in terms of X, X or the pillars. But
I once went to a
good story.
Psychic. What do you call it? A psychic marketplace or a psychic convention.
And there was a talk by a person at the,
and
like in a.
I'm really humble. I mean, I don't say, you know, I don't go around with my T-shirt. I'm a psychic. You know, I don't tell anybody. I don't.
In terms of your public, like, you know, what you do, you know, you don't go around in supermarkets and, you know, approach people and give them readings, things like that.
No, I don't. People ask me what I do.
Profile.
I say, oh, I'm a writer. I don't advertise. So I went to this psychic fair, I guess you could call it, and the person I was with dragged me into this lecture from this woman. And I was just downright, I didn't want to go in. I didn't want to go to the psychic fair to begin with, but we went. I think I was looking for a cane or something or something to buy. And so we went into this conference and we were all sitting there. There was about 40 of us. And the woman who was giving the lecture started talking about hands. And she said, I want everybody to raise their hand so I can take a look at it. And she went to each person and said a little description about them. And then she came to me and she said, raise your hand. And I went, I was like trying to not do it. She goes, raise your hand. So obviously I had to raise my hand. I was thinking, oh boy, where's this going to go? And she's looking at it and she goes, oh, you're really psychic. And then the more she said it, the more enthusiastic she became. You're extremely psychic. Wow, I've never seen a hand like that. And then she said, did you know that? And I went, oh, no, you know. I was mumbling. I never told her I was psychic. I just kind of looked shy and sheepish. And she just said, well, you better investigate that. Now, after she did that, you know, I walked out and I started staring at my hand. I go, what the hell did she was she looking at? I mean, the shape of my hand. And I'm psychic, don't forget.
And
so
you obviously at the time. Concealing the fact. I don't know
I was
why.
Concealing,
but
well,
you're kind of introverted, surprisingly. I mean, people probably wouldn't think that on the radio, but you're introverted. We're introverts.
Yeah,
actually.
We're actually introverted. We don't, you know, I'm kind of shy. I didn't really talk till I was 8. I was really shy. I had a lot of audience fear. But anyways,
no,
I went,
I wouldn't say that
what
to
I
me,
did was
but.
I went back in the past.
Right.
But, so I went home and I started to look at, you know, what they called the psychic hand. The fingers are smaller. They're this, they're that. The hands, there's a certain personality in the hand that suggests you're psychic. And you can look this up online, what they consider a psychic hand. I think the fingers, they describe the fingers, the shape of the hand. And I looked at my hand and went, oh my God, that's the kind of hand I've got. I see, I didn't need to look up my hand to know that I was psychic. I didn't need to do that. And it was only through discovery that I realized how my hands could work with being psychic. Sometimes when I'm looking at somebody with their third eye, I'll use my hands like I'm flying a kite, I'm guiding my hands in front of their face, and I'm using my hand, and I rub my palms together. I use my hand again, because it seems like when I'm using my hands and sort of moving them back and forth.
It directs the energy.
Yeah, the energy of the person changes. They morph this way, they morph that way. I get a signal here, I get a signal there. And so I'm thinking, this hand stuff is really important.
Gosh.
But that was when I was like a, you know, 12, 13, 14, up to 17 years old, I was discovering that the hands really have a psychic connection to the mind. There's something going on with the relationship there, aside from the fact of palmistry and how interesting that science is, if you want, not science, but that study is. And were you going to say something?
Well, I was going to say that before we were ever connected, I ordered all this crap to print my hands. I took imprints of my hands with ink and then, you know, I had accompanying books to try to read the palm because I thought it was really fascinating. I mean, all those areas I would research, you know, palmistry and cards and this and that. But
well, that doesn't always work for me. I put my hands in paint in the second grade and made an imprint on a piece of paper, and I got a C minus in art. So I don't know, you know, apparently it didn't work academically back then, but the idea of the hand itself, it's a face and it's got a map on it, and there's an energy, and the lines, the shape of the fingers, the destiny line, the lifeline, all of these things help to allow us to understand our energy, our chemistry. And then good palmists will say, you know, your palm changes. That's how they get to come back to do more readings. But it's true. Your hand will
change. They do
change.
Aside from the aging, like, you know, yes, over time. And of course, there's going to be variations in the hand because of the aging process. But aside from that, you know, things can change in the energy field of the palm.
Yeah.
Like the man, I don't see the man that was in my hand now for some reason.
Well, after what I told him, he left. So the hand is a remarkable feature of the part of the human being. And it's helped us to evolve in intelligence. It's helped us to evolve actually in invention and things like that. And so we have this evolutionary process of what the hand has done for us. Now, unfortunately, our hands are becoming more useless because we have robots doing everything. And we're wondering what's going to happen to the human species as the automation and the mechanical world, the robot world takes over. But we have to understand that every part of our body is a reed. And the hands are most important because they've been given a really leading role in literature and history. It's amazing, you know, people will say, oh, he has surgeon's hands, or he has musical hands, or mechanical hands, you know.
Piano hands.
They talk about all these things about that the identity of the person is sometimes linked to the identity of the hand.
There's an interesting passage in Timothy, it's Timothy 5:22, and it says, lay hands suddenly on no man, neither be partaker of other man's sins, keep thyself pure. So it's interesting. And then there's like a little interpretation, which I just saw here, which I don't really, I mean, to me, that means, you know, be careful about who you try to heal, because you could get, you know, mix your karma with theirs and thereby, you know.
Right.
Get yourself into some trouble.
A lot of allusions to that, you know, if thy hand.
That's not the interpretation this Bible site has, but of course, you know,
we can elaborate
on it.
And if your hand offends you, cut it off. You know, in other words, that there's a read on the hand. And why, you know, when you go to court, lift your hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but truth, so help you God? Why lift the hand? Because there's a mark on it. There's a mark on it that seems to be composed of an imprint of action, of intent, of motivation, of thought. So our hands can give us away. And they say, don't come to court with, you know, you come to court with clean hands, meaning that when you come to court, you come to court not lying. You come to court with not a bad record. And it's an actual judicial term,
right? Clean hands or dirty hands. Both apply.
They're actually said in the court system. the clean hand, dirty hand policy. So, and then we shake hands. You know, we shake hands. What is the bond between that? The sharing of chakras, the sharing of energy. So, and we've lost that art, and we've lost that real, true, pure connection, because now we have to have contracts and to protect us. But it, originally, the shaking of the hand. So the hand can be a peace and bondage, good bondage, bonding, and the hand can kill. The hand can destroy. And so the process of this energy, which is not only anatomical, evolutionary, psychic, emotional, it's a life pattern, it's a whole screen of events. To be taken most literally, that it's just not, oh, a palm reading. Oh, we have a line there. Oh, interesting, I have an X on my palm. It's more than that. There's something deeply impressed upon us because it is a landscape. And even we equate this to, in our, with Chris and I, we equate this to the landscape of numerology, which we feel is a whole process of information. That's why we're working on a book, over 1,000 pages now on the book, in just pure notes that we've copyrighted, just for the process of the uniqueness of the content and the language that we have expressed in terms of the expansion of numerology into fields and issues of thought that
have
never
been
spoken about.
Right, beyond the personality and specific traits.
Even beyond the thought that numerology can be a destiny, you know, you have your destiny number, you have your life
soul number, and
even karmic number. I've spent probably 40 years studying numerology, and since I was, you know, was four years old, and my grandfather started to drill me about it.
But he had not developed numerology in the way that you developed the theories of numerology.
No,
you
know,
you essentially took.
He gave me the basics,
right?
And then
you took
he told
it from
me
where
that,
he left off, and then expanded upon it.
He was psychic, and he said to me, I remember being a little boy. He said, "You're going to take this much further than I could ever take it." But he was psychic too, but he knew, and he kept drilling, hard teacher, about the process of it, whereby I started to discover uniquely and serendipitously new things about numerology that now we're finally, you know, with my wife Kristen, we're developing the whole broad, expansive theory of numerology.
And your grandfather knew about, what did he say to you about me? He said, "Watch for the three." When you were a child.
He did say that. And then, you know,
that goes deeper
into other facets of the approach of your coming, which was, you know, put into books before you ever came and things like that. And just things that we have to go through in life, whether we like it or not, we go through these situations and relationships, karma, things get opened up, then they get broken, and you're going through all this to finally arrive at the destiny line.
Which I think is why, Neil, we are really compassionate and empathetic people, is because of what we've had to go through in each of our lives. You know, I think that prepares for this type of interaction and helping people.
Because the reality is we met, and then it wasn't a fluke because we got married. And getting married wasn't a fluke because we're working on a radio show and we're developing a book and we're doing readings. I mean, this is not an accident. Is it predestined? Was it planned? We believe so. But you know, sometimes along the route, you get lost in the episode that you're in, and you get all emotionally entwined and you don't know why you're going through it until you come out of the ditch. I remember Chris Farley once in a movie, he rolled down this hill. They were camping and he rolled down this hill. He tumbled down for about 2 minutes and he gets to the bottom of the hill and he says, "What was all that about?" I mean, one of the funniest lines in a movie, but it's like life. We take life and we're like, it feels like we're falling down a hill and just tumbling without even being able to stop.
You had that experience, actually.
That happened to me
personally.
In Catalina. I tumbled down a large hill in Catalina. And and I was, and I got up, and I mean, I tumbled for about 5 minutes. I couldn't stop. And I got up, and there were a couple walking up to me, and they go, "What's the climb like up there?" I go, "Well, it's a lot faster coming down." And they didn't know what I was talking about, but obviously I looked like a mess. But the idea of life being this situation where the gravity of the physical world turns you here, turns you there. You don't understand why you're being tossed and turned. You go into things because your emotions lead you there. Sometimes it's your intellect. And you have no idea that there's a cosmic map that's guiding you. Is it on your hand? Is it in your pineal gland? Is it just in the cosmos? Is it in your soul and spirit? Is it in your astral body? I think it's all of them. So we take this energy, and then what Chris and I have done is we've conducted it into the code of birth dates. And we're revealing what that code really means, more than just a master number, a personality, a line of destiny. We're really describing where these numbers come from, origin of time and space, and maybe even before time and space. Not that we're special, but that's what theories are about. And then we've processed the support of our theories by so many different examples that it's at least, if not it intriguing and entertaining, at least maybe. But there is authenticity behind it because for myself, I've spent my whole life basing a lot of my readings on numerology, aside from being purely just coldly psychic itself. And now, Kristen,
well, it's a tool, but go ahead.
It's a tool, and you're now using it and expanding your third eye, and I see it happening before my very eyes, and I'm very impressed with how you're becoming more psychic, because we have this advantage of being married and developing every day your abilities,
yeah,
which is becoming stronger.
Yeah.
So
it's a fascinating process.
Yeah,
it's
really
a fascinating process, but we are out of time. So we can...
We're in time and out of time.
We're out of time on this show, but we're not out of time in you know, a broader sense.
But we're vegetarian, so we are in and out burgers.
And we use thyme and other herbs.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're back on the air on Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we hope you have a great weekend.